Fantasy Freaks and Geeks, what's up? You're listening to NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here, your host. We got the whiz kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar, not behind the glass today.
Excited to be outside again.
We appreciate the efforts and the help from our senior producer of NFL Fantasy Live, Dylan Milner.
Bro, I've been here the whole time.
Yeah, buddy. Plus, we got the powerful oracle of prognostication, the slayer of spreadsheet cells, the master of formulas. We have analytics expert Cynthia Freeland in the building. What's up?
Wow. Not only did I get to hear our Fantasy Live music, which I really miss.
Okay.
It's like my favorite one to dance to, but that was a really nice intro.
That was good.
That was a really nice
intro. That was like half wrestling introduction, half Game of Thrones lineage.
It really set this up well. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. By the way, we welcome in those folks on Facebook Live.
I was told there would be no video.
Yeah. Well, it's a tiny phone camera.
It's cool. I didn't brush my hair. We're good.
It looks great. It looks like that relaxed SoCal vibe. Exactly.
Yep.
All right, so it's good. We're good. We're going to be talking about the AFC South today. We're going to be talking extensively about Andrew Luck. Some interesting news certainly out of Indianapolis there. We're going to be breaking down a 12-team PPR mock draft we just got done. As well, so that should be a lot of fun. And again, we'll talk about the Texans, we'll talk about the Titans, we'll talk about the Colts, we'll talk about the Jaguars, Allen Robinson, Nuke Hopkins, DeMarco Murray. We're going to try to get the great Matt Harmon on the phone. It's been a while since we've heard his baritone voice.
The international stylings.
International.
Well, he's taken it international now.
He has, indeed. We will try to get him on the phone. We never know when we make a call into the wild if it actually works, but we'll see. And if he's available, we shall discuss some wide receivers with the wide receiver prognosticator himself, Matt Harmon. But we start the show, as always, with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Who wants the news? Because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
All right, Andrew Luck says the rehab on his shoulder is going well, but also admitted that he has not started throwing yet. It's been a while, man. Luck had surgery on his throwing shoulder in January to fix what owner Jim Irsay called, quote, simple labrum repair. Where do you have Andrew Luck ranked, Alex Gelhar, and does the news concern you?
I had him at, I think, my QB3 or 4 before, but now that his progress is a little slower and we don't know anything, so I'll probably slide him down just a touch. He'll still be in the top 10, but in that back half, I might push guys like Russell Wilson ahead of him now, or Drew Brees, maybe even Marcus Mariota after all the additions they've made.
Very
passing attack.
How about for yourself, Cynthia?
Top 5 for sure, and I'm not worried about him one bit.
Not one bit?
Nope, not one bit.
Why not?
I feel like he's just a little bit more honest than a lot of guys we hear,
okay.
Right? Like, you're never going to – I just don't think he's going to – he's not – if something were really wrong, then maybe we'd hear less or they wouldn't let him get on the podium.
Right.
But it's still – you know, it's still June last I checked. And
it's
Andrew
early.
Luck is an elite scoring quarterback, and he now has this improved defense, which by my math means that his offense gets better chance to have better field positioning and more turnovers, meaning more scoring opportunities. So for me, top 5, if not, you know, 3, 4, it'll just – really depend in the end.
All right, can you guys talk to me about what this means possibly anyways for T.Y. Hilton or Dante Moncrief in terms of their relative rankings as well? And we'll start with you.
Doesn't really move him for me either.
Nothing?
It slides Luck down for the just slightly, like I said, for the health concern. If he comes back and I see the same old Luck, or you know, all signs that he'll be 100% by week 1, I'll bump him right back up. But for those guys, I mean, I don't think it really changes their value. T.Y. Hilton's still a locked top 10 wide receiver, and Dante Moncrief is what he's been every year. He's got all the talent in the world, but you're going to draft him in the wide receiver 20 to 30 range, and
right.
Situational wide receiver for sure. I'm really interested this year with, you know, there's only one cut, right? We go from 90 right to 53. There's no 75. So I'm going to be really interested to see in games maybe 2 and 3 this year in preseason. I know I hate preseason, but seeing kind of like who they give the new looks to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be, to me, that will be the determining factor for Moncrief.
It wouldn't be just Dorsett. I mean, I would assume. I mean, they spent some pretty good draft capital on Dorsett. I mean, I'd be surprised if he wasn't the number three target there. No,
I'd be surprised if he is. To be honest, I think it's Kamar Aiken. They brought
him
into.
That's right.
They brought
him into. Kamar Aiken's the one. In my head when I was what I was saying, and I should have just said it out loud instead of being sneaky about it. Was is it going to be Kamar Aiken or is it going to be Dante Moncrief? I think that he could. I think Aiken could be the number two.
So not only can Aiken be the number three, you think he can be the number two?
Kamar Aiken's good.
He's very good. And the word from the front office this offseason was they brought in Aiken to push for the number three, but they also kind of hinted at that all the jobs are open in that wide receiver.
Let's be
after
clear, T.Y. Hilton's not.
Yeah,
right.
his job
right.
All the other ones. All the other ones after that.
Right.
Because like we said, Moncrief has all this mouthwatering talent and size and speed and stuff, but he can't stay healthy and hasn't fully delivered on the field. Kamar Aiken at the back half of the 2015 season was one of the better wide receivers in like efficiency, scoring.
Okay.
And was receiving a lot of targets. So I think they know he can play, and they're going to let him compete.
All right, let's talk about Cam Newton. He also is recovering from a January shoulder surgery to repair not only a labrum but a partial rotator cuff injury as well. He is throwing, and I love the way that they announced it in this digital new media age. This was according to a music video, of all things, that the Panthers released.
Because why not?
On Twitter. Did you guys actually see this video?
I heard about it. I did not watch it.
It's lit.
It's lit.
It's
isn't
lit.
He just throwing? Isn't he throwing in the locker room
throwing,
like 10 feet?
He's throwing in the locker room 10
you know,
feet, and it looks awesome.
Gonna, I think that actually is. I think you're onto something there.
Oh,
to
my
me,
goodness.
The 10 feet is an interesting thing, right? I think that with the shoulder surgery, we've been doing a lot of work on what could happen with Cam Newton, especially with Christian McCaffrey and the additions and Curtis Samuel, all these kind of hybrid sort of players. I think what they're going to do to protect that shoulder, no more rushing out of the zone read. That's not going to be the plan because you get hit more often if you're rushing out of the zone read as a quarterback. But these short passes, so those 10 yards in his Liddy video, then that's kind of, I think, what we're going to see on the field this year. I think he's going to set, for me, Cam Newton's going to set his passing records, his career passing records this year. That's my prediction.
I have been on record in saying that I have serious doubts as to whether or not Cam Newton can change, whether Ron Rivera can change, or even if they do change, how much change are we talking about here, right? Are we talking about 3 or 4 plays a game, or are we talking 10 to 15? If it's on the 10 to 15 side, then yeah, of course, Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel, all those guys, you start feeling better about that. But we are well into Cam Newton's career. We are well into Ron Rivera's career as well. It's hard for guys like that to change. So I have my reservations, but I do think, at least on its surface, it would make sense for them to change the game plan.
Yeah, I think they've hinted at doing the Ben Roethlisberger type of thing, and that was a very similar transition where he was the big guy, scrambling quarterback, would run a lot in his younger years, and now we don't see him get out of the pocket. He dumps it off to Le'Veon Bell, or he dump it off to D'Angelo Williams, or whomever.
There's a little chicken and a little egg. Who are they going to do other than Greg Olsen last year? Who was going to get those short and intermediate passes? They didn't have the personnel there like they do now. They've really loaded up in that. So there's a little chicken.
Fozzie Whitaker? Are you going to throw 80 targets to him in the short range? And Greg Olsen actually did have a lot of air yards too among tight ends. I was looking at the next gen.
Sure.
That stuff was way up there because they used to like to do that 5-7 step drop, chuck it deep. I'm sure that will still be part of their arsenal because that better suits Kelvin Benjamin and Greg Olsen as well. But now they have the, like you said, Cynthia, the talent to go underneath as well.
All right. So we shall break down the 12-team PPR mock draft. I hand the reins over to Alex Gelhar.
Oh, wow.
Did a great write-up on this as well. I have to multitask here because I apparently on Facebook Live did not change the sideways video. So we are broadcasting on Facebook Live sideways right now.
James, way to go. Way to go. Okay, so let's run through
from
this.
The technical side, folks, I'm here to host a podcast. I apologize. Let me go and fix it. Alex
right,
Geller, you take
that.
The reins,
I'll
pal.
Take the reins here. All right, so the PPR mock draft, we had 12 people. We have a number of people on vacation right now, so some of the usual suspects weren't there. Marcus wasn't there. Harmon and Franchise weren't there. We grabbed some other friends from the industry, Raymond Summerlin from Roto World, Scott Barrett from Pro Football Focus, and Scott Fish and Ari Engel from Dynasty League Football and Football Guys. They were in one of our last mocks, too. We did PPR. One thing that kind of surprised me off the top, and I put this in the write-up, was in the first two rounds, more running backs went than wide receivers. which I think potentially speaks to the dearth of like true workhorse running backs, or like those guys that are going to see a high-ish volume of carries and also get involved in the passing game. But what about you guys think? What I went wide receiver to start. I went A.J. Green, Doug Baldwin. How did you two attack the top of this draft? I mean, you had number one overall, Cynthia.
Right, so I didn't really have to make much of a decision.
Close your eyes and hit David Johnson. That's
right.
Pretty easy.
Right, like I tried to get, you know, I told you that I was at yoga, so I had to like get out of my yoga class and go right there, and it turns out it wouldn't have mattered because I had the first pick, so David Johnson either way.
No matter what.
Right.
And then James, he's still fixing his thing, but James went at the top of the draft. Let me find him in here. Went Ezekiel Elliott. He had the third pick. And then coming back around, he grabbed Todd Gurley, which actually surprised me a little bit, James. And perhaps you can elaborate on your Todd Gurley pick here now that you're back.
And I don't even know
if I fixed it. Are we the correct way?
I really have no idea if I fixed it or not, but it doesn't matter. Hey, it doesn't matter.
Looks good.
Yeah, it looks fine. I will say this. I did not particularly like my draft.
Okay, so James,
James's best comment was that he had a great team in a standard
draft.
Format
right.
Draft.
So let's see here. Let me run you guys through James' team. He picked three overall.
Yeah.
He has Jameis Winston at quarterback, Todd Gurley, Zeke Elliott, Devontae Adams, Martavis Bryant, Jack Doyle, Isaiah Crowell in the flex. On the bench, Marlon Mack, Latavius Murray, Samaje Perine. Wow, this is a great standard team, James.
It's a wonderful standard team.
You've got Willie Snead and James White down there
in
the bench. Randall Cobb could have some upside. Chris Conley, good 40 time for you.
Great vertical as well.
Let me ask you this. Okay. What did you regret or what were your mistakes, you think, going through the draft?
I mean, if you look at my top three running backs, right? So we're talking about, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley.
Good running backs, yeah.
Yeah, and Isaiah Crowell. Now, I love all three of those guys in standard, but in PPR, they lose a lot of value because, again, and I know a lot can change, obviously, with Zeke Elliott. They're talking about trying to get him involved a little bit in the passing game a bit more, but we know that his bread is buttered between the tackles as a runner. I don't think that they're going to utilize him that often. Plus, Dak Prescott, a great, you know, mobile quarterback, and we know that, you know, mobile quarterbacks and receiving running backs, a little bit oil and water there. So,
and so you actually opened up the draft with three straight running backs. Then you grabbed Crowell in the third.
Yeah, so...
I think he had, like, what, 40 catches last year, though? So nothing to, like, totally turn your nose up at.
I agree with, but with Duke Johnson there, I mean, how much... I don't know. I just don't know how much work he's going to get in the passing game. And again, Todd Gurley, you know, good talent, good solid talent. I think the touchdown upside is certainly there for all three. But in terms of that safe weekly floor that PPR provides a lot of running backs, I just didn't think it was there.
So which pick would you have taken back? Would you have rather grabbed a wide receiver with one of those second picks? Like Cynthia took Terrell Pryor two picks after you in the second round. And then she took Brandon Cooks. Amari Cooper was still available. Well, I think he's a great player, like I said. I just have concerns for him going that high in PPR with Edelman and Gronk and all those backs there.
I was trying to stretch out the Terrell Pryor pick into round three.
Yeah.
Because I had a quick turnaround.
Round two.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
right.
I didn't think I had to stretch it that far. Unfortunately, Cynthia Freeland very smartly took her Terrell Pryor in the third round. So I just kind of got left holding the bag, and I think in that round three, I really regretted the Crowell pick. That's where I wish I went wide receiver there, but I just didn't have one queued up ready to go.
Yeah. In the third round, wide receivers, Cynthia started with Brandon Cooks, Amari Cooper went with the fourth pick in the round, Demaryius Thomas went with the sixth, DeAndre Hopkins, Allen Robinson, and Alshon Jeffrey all went in the round. Now I want to jump to me for a second, because in that third round, I'm very excited. Well, I took a lot of heat on this pick on Twitter for taking Travis Kelce in the third round. People were like, you can't do that. I even told them when we were drafting Dylan and Alex Wilk and some others in the newsroom, I'm like, I'm going to get a little bit spicy here, but...
Yeah.
I think with Kelce, like right there, I wasn't in love with some of the wide receivers behind him. The running backs also, because there was such a huge run, thanks to people like you taking three to start. I mean, Bilal Powell was the next best running back after I took Travis Kelce in the third. And I was trying to do what you did with Terrell Pryor. I wanted Ty Montgomery, but I thought I could get him in the fourth, and Adam Rank ruined that for me.
No!
But so I took Kelce because he's a guy that caught 85 passes last year, over 1,000 yards, and his four or five touchdowns. They got rid of Jeremy Maclin, so there's going to be more targets up for grabs. And they kind of transitioned to him being the focal point of the offense late down the year. And in PPR, having a pass-catching tight end that sees reliable targets can be a huge difference maker for you. A lot of tight ends nowadays are reliant on touchdowns. Guys like Hunter Henry, all the
100%.
Guys in the back end. Kyle Rudolph, he had a lot of catches last year. So with Travis Kelce, I get a very safe floor. Over the last 3 years, only two tight ends have had 65-plus catches every year, Travis Kelce and Greg Olsen. who I think you took a couple rounds later, right, Cynthia?
It did.
So I took Travis Kelce there, figuring I get the safe upside, and I have a very realistic high ceiling if he gets into the end zone a few more times, or if they even funnel him a few more targets and he gets up into that 90 to 100 catch range, which would be a little crazy, but
that would be
he was at 85 last year. So
yeah, it'd be aggressive. I mean, again, with no Jeremy Maclin for the entire season, it can certainly happen.
Yeah.
It can certainly happen.
And again, it was like I would have loved to take a running back there, but it was all the relative value. All the great ones were gone.
Sure.
I wasn't going to jump on Bilal Powell in the middle of that round.
No.
And I wanted Ty Montgomery, but I thought I could get him around later. Came up no.
So, all right. Give me your favorite pick in the draft.
Favorite pick in the draft.
If it's on your team or maybe it's if it's somewhere else.
Scrolling through the results, which you guys can read, NFL.com/fantasy or NFL.com/Gelhar. See, I think Rank got nice value in the fifth with Danny Woodhead at the end of the round there. Cynthia got Spencer Ware in that round, too. That was pretty solid value.
For the newer listeners, Cynthia, can you tell the newer listeners the difference between standard and PPR, how does it necessarily change how you approach a draft?
Well, the bottom line is that each catch counts a lot more.
Yeah.
So a running back gets all their running back points like normal, but if they catch a ball, they get a point for that or whatever the designated, you know, amount is. So it makes the value of a pass-catching running back just enormous.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions here, too, is that wide receivers have more value than a running back, which I completely disagree with. I just think that, to your point, pass-catching running backs now all of a sudden have – Chris Thompson has value. Theo Riddick has value. When James White gets going, he's going to have value. These guys that are specialized running backs, I think, to me, all of a sudden now have value, where in standard, maybe not so much. Dylan Milner.
I think if you look to this exact point, if you look at a couple of rounds, look at the round one of this mock draft that we did. 12 teams, there were 7 running backs. And the first 3 were the chalk: David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott.
Right.
A lot of times in PPR drafts, you'll see the first round flip on its head, and it's going to go
all wide receivers.
Antonio Brown, Beckham, Julio, da-da-da, and there's this overcompensation. The first round in this PPR draft looks like it's the same
standard
draft.
Yeah.
The other round to look at, to your point about it changes the pass-catching tight ends, is kind of in the I guess it's a combo. Round 7, round 8. This is where – sorry, one round off. This is where I'm taking – sorry, round 6. Theo Riddick in round 6, right? Round 5, you've got Danny Woodhead. So they're – earlier the rounds you go, that's when some of those Chris Thompsons, Theo Riddick, Danny Woodhead guys get pushed up. But it doesn't change the stud chalk picks at the very beginning of the drafts.
So I don't know. See, to me, it breaks things up a little bit, right? Because you have people who have one big catch for a lot of yards. You have to do like, you have to figure out like, are you a like one big catch? Like Marvin Jones is a good example of this, like one big catch guy. And then you kind of get your points from him in that. And so in PPR, like the plus one from him isn't as big of a differentiator as the guy who catches maybe a lot of like
Golden Tate on the same team.
Exactly. Right. Like little dinks and dunks here and there, where that extra point per reception is ridiculous in terms of calculating their value. So to me, it just, the clusters come at different points. So Dylan's totally right. In our draft, that's what happened.
Yeah.
But the clusters, you see them around different players. It doesn't really change the top.
I mean, high volume guys for me at least are attractive in PPR, especially because of the safe floor that they provide each and every week. You're right. Marvin Jones might catch one for 40 yards and a touch, which is great in standard. It's a solid 10-point week. But you know, are you going to get that every single week versus a guy like Golden Tate? 5 for 50?
Yeah.
Okay, you still got 10 points. It's not that sexy in standard, but in PPR, if this is a guy that's giving you 5.50 every single week, you'll take that all day long.
Right.
Yeah, it's a nice situation. And
CJ Procise went in round 7 of this draft.
I was going to say,
round
7 had a couple picks that I really liked. You're asking favorites. I liked what Cynthia and Raymond Summerlin did at the top of the draft. She got Jeremy Maclin, which I think a lot of people have been kind of tepid about his
value. He was hurt and he had too much cap space.
I know.
He's a good player.
I know, exactly. He's a great player.
Goodness gracious.
He's a great player. The Ravens have like all of the targets available on their team from last year, because Steve Smith is gone.
There.
Dennis Pitta is gone.
Yeah.
Kyle Juszczyk is gone. So Jeremy Maclin was a great pick there. He should see a ton of volume.
Ton.
Because they need that consistent chain moving pass catcher with Steve Smith.
Aren't there like something like 300 targets up for grabs from last year?
It's an obscene number.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's an obscene number. And then Cameron Meredith too. In the 7th round, I mean, there's concerns about the Bears' offense as a whole a little bit, but that's a guy that should see a ton of volume and was pretty productive both in the slot where he played most of his snap or like half of his snaps last year and when they pushed him outside. So okay. I think those are two great value picks right there for a lot of receptions and potentially a lot of points.
All right, it's the NFL division breakdown, the AFC South. We're getting down to it, man. It's our second to last division here.
Almost there.
Texans, 9-7, won the AFC South. Quarterback was a disaster for them last year. Brock Osweiler.
Who was the quarterback? Oh, got it. Forgot about him. He didn't make any noise at all. We didn't talk about him at all.
Nope.
Was,
not a storyline.
Nope.
It's refreshing to talk about it now, actually.
DeAndre Hopkins, suffered as a result in real life and in fantasy. Does he bounce back enough this year? Look, we know he's going to bounce back somewhat, but does he bounce back enough this year to justify a top 30 price tag? Alex Skelhar.
I'm concerned about him at his current price tag because he's being drafted as like the wide receiver anywhere from 12 to 15 or so on average.
He's a top 30 though, right?
A top 30 overall pick.
Yes. Got it.
That's first three or so rounds, which is where he's going, even at that wide receiver 12 or 15 evaluation. But even if we go back to his first kind of breakout year, where he had 1,200 yards and 6 touchdowns, his targets didn't fall off too much from his huge year in 2015 to 2016. But it was his efficiency in getting in the end zone. His touchdowns fell down to, 4 from 11 in 2 years ago. And I think he could bounce back and have a great overall season, 1,100 yards, 6 touchdowns or something like that again. But that slides him more into a wide receiver 20-ish overall finish, and he's being drafted at his ceiling right now. And I think that's a little unrealistic considering either Tom Savage or a rookie's going to be in there. I'd rather wait a round or two and get him at, I feel, what's a more appropriate evaluation for his range of outcomes.
Late third, early fourth?
Fourth or so, yeah.
He's not going there.
He's not going there. Yeah. But I think people are chasing that ceiling too much and will feel burned even if he produces a solid season because they sunk such a high draft pick in him.
Cynthia?
Yeah, I'm kind of all in on him.
Yeah?
All in?
Yeah. I love him
Let's
as a player,
go!
But I'm just worried.
This is my broad strokes math on it, right?
Okay.
So you have someone who is one of the most efficient route runners in the NFL. And Harmon, where's he? We need Harmon to verify.
We'll call him.
He definitely will. He'll say that. And what you had when you saw any quarterback that he could have, right? Efficiency would be great. The knock that we saw on his rookie quarterback was that when he was throwing passes, he threw a lot of picks or whatever. And they at Clemson, they play more of a jump ball style, and so if that rookie can adapt, right? I don't want to make projections and prognostications about rookie quarterbacks because that's a really hard thing to do.
Incredibly hard.
But I will say that if you are an incredibly efficient route runner, you tend to have, with a change in quarterback, it's likely that you're the one that gets the most targets. Do I think he gets the same kind of crazy targets he got the year he had 4 different quarterbacks? No, but I do think that, I think he's worth, I'm in. I don't think he's going. I do think it is closer to his ceiling, but I think that's where we're going to see him perform because I think he didn't seem very happy last year. So I think it's going to be something that.
How could you not be happy watching balls go straight into the dirt?
I believe he can hit that ceiling even with this mishmash of quarterbacks he has because, it'd be hard to be much worse than Brock Osweiler was last year. But I just think in terms of other players in that range, I'd rather feel somebody who I think is in a safer zone for their range of outcomes and try and catch Nuke a little later. But I understand I'll probably miss out on him.
Can he or Deshaun Kizer figure out who's going to be the Deshaun? Because there's just too many Deshauns right now for me. I'm like Deshaun.
Watson, Kizer.
Kizer, Watson, Foster?
See, I don't even
Deshaun Foster.
It's all last names, so I don't even think about
Watson,
it.
Kizer.
Right. I can't do it.
I hate to put that on a rookie though. So to me it's I won't say who because I'm Savage or him, but because I think both of them would benefit from a really consistent route runner. Yeah, Will Fuller's a burner and he's going to get down the field faster, but you want someone to be consistent. If you're practicing and you can throw it to this area and that person's always open and create separation, that's who I'm throwing to if I'm Tom Savage or if I'm Deshaun Watson Kizer or either one. You're good.
I like it. On Fantasy Football Calculator, DeAndre Hopkins right now is going at 27 overall, one pick behind Brandon Cooks. I tell you what, if I had my choice between the two, I would take Nuke Hopkins. The Titans at 9-7. Oh, excuse me. We're going to stay with the Texans. Lamar Miller. I wanted to ask about Lamar Miller because, the fantasy community was hyper about Lamar Miller last year. I felt like he was a big-time disappointment. Now there's even more question marks, especially about his touchdown upside, given that Dante Foreman is sitting right there behind him. Alex Gallagher, your thoughts on Lamar?
Well, I mean, the reason everybody was so hyped last year was because we felt he was only getting the partial workload in Miami, and he was producing a lot. So thinking, wow, it goes to a decent offense, gets the wealth of touches, it could hopefully turn into
volume.
More points. Yeah, volume. And it kind of went in the opposite way. He posted his lowest yards per carry and yards per reception totals of the last 3 years. But the crazy thing was he saw more total touches, but he didn't see a bigger share of the pie. He saw just shy of 62% of the opportunities, touches, and targets out of the Houston backfield. In 2015, he saw 63%, and in 2014, he saw 61%. So
interesting.
It was right in that range. He had more total touches by about 50 or so over the last couple of years. But, yeah, I think the concerns about his touchdown upside are warranted because now there are just more threats when they get near the red zone. They have the big bruising back in Foreman, as you mentioned. C.J. Fedorowicz kind of established himself as a decent red zone threat last year. And, of course, Nuke Hopkins is great in the red zone and on the boundary. So this is also a team that might not project to be the highest scoring offense. They've got a great defense. They'll probably want to play more clock control. They're not going to be dropping 40 points on people regularly. So if his chunk of the scoring pie stays low, what do you have, 6 touchdowns last year total, or he only gets 5 or so? There's serious concerns about that for him.
I'm a coaching tree person, so I couldn't agree with you more, but which coaching tree does he come from? Bill Belichick. What does Bill Belichick do? He does not tell you which running back that he likes the best, and he does not tell you which running back's going to get the touchdowns, and he does not give you any clues.
So right.
To me, I think the ideal situation for Deshaun Watson, Tom Savage, Bill O'Brien, the whole offense is to have a wealth of people who could be
right.
ball carriers. So for us fantasy players, that stinks. But I think that you're going to see that Belichickian. I think they're at least trying to construct that sort of running back by committee, but we don't know the committee, and if you fumble, then you're out for you're punished. You're
right.
In the bad corner.
Lamar Miller on Fantasy Football Calculator, a top 25 pick. At that price tag, I will pass.
Pass.
The Titans at 9-7 last year, also at 9-7, but they were due to tiebreaker. Second in the division, DeMarco Murray was a monster last year, man. Huge draft day bargain following a torturous 2015 campaign. In 2016, DeMarco Murray bounced back in a big-time way. 1,287 rushing, 377 receiving, 12 total touchdowns to go along with 4.4 yards per carry. He was absolutely terrific.
He was like a league-winning pick, considering where he was going in drafts
exactly.
by the time the season was starting.
Just an absolute beast last year, and what a crazy bounce-back year it was for DeMarco Murray. Does he keep that train rolling in 2017?
I'm saying yes. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I think that gives you a chance. Now, while I do think Derrick Henry will get more touches and you'll see more, I think he's going to have a plus 1,500 scrimmage yard season again? I don't know. But I still think for the where you'd be drafting him in your leagues in a very high position, I think you're going to get a lot of value out of him. And you'll see Derrick Henry start to emerge and fill in wherever he needs to be filled in. But honestly, I don't see, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You're on the cusp of having a really great team. So go put that veteran running back in there. Command all those people to get in the box. I think you tweeted out something. It was like
they faced the most 8-man boxes.
It was like Derrick Henry was number one and DeMarco Murray was number two.
Which is crazy.
Right?
Yeah. Like DeMarco Murray and he's still averaging.
Cool.
Like,
great. Give those guys on the outside a chance then.
Right.
Hold
exactly.
those people in the box.
They both averaged over 4 yards a carry against 8-man boxes too.
Right.
And now this team went out and added Corey Davis and Eric Decker.
Totally.
Like,
so
let's go.
Yeah. So I think keep the vet in, pepper in, Derrick Henry. Allow him to prolong Derrick Henry's career by not taking so many touches. I think it's fantasy gold.
Pro Football Focus has the Tennessee offensive line as one of the 5 best offensive lines in football as well. And man,
agreed.
A lot of first rounders on that.
Moving people last year, man.
I'm going to tell you a quick story about their O-line coach.
Let's
he's
do it.
Like one of my. His name is Russell Grimm. He's like one of my favorite people in all.
That's a great name for an O-line.
Oh
coach.
Yeah.
And he's
Grimm.
Also just awesome.
What?
He played O-line for Washington in
what?
His career.
That's
he's
great.
Just
yeah.
rad, and he's sitting
awesome.
There. I've been doing a big study on waist benders because I want to try
you
to
talking about it on Sheck's podcast.
Yeah, so they try to measure their hips and if they can back up and all these different things. And O-line coaches really love analytics. No,
not at all. Negative.
So
my goal
is to win him over. And he's like, hey, he's like, you better be watching my guys. He's like Taylor Lewan, blah blah blah. And he's sitting there, and I'm like, I know, I know. So he's the best. If you ever get a chance to watch him, he's like the coolest.
Oh, man.
I was going to say about this split, I think this is one we're going to have to watch the drum beat we always talk about, what the coaches are saying.
All right.
Basically from the end of the season through now, Mike Mularkey has been saying DeMarco Murray is our workhorse. DeMarco Murray is our workhorse. We're not going to change that. We love Derrick Henry, but DeMarco Murray is our workhorse.
Okay.
The offensive coordinator just at the beginning of this month said, and this is a very loose quote, but he said, we're going to find ways to use both of them. That was his quote. But he wasn't saying, like, Derrick Henry's going to get, you know, 20 touches a game now. I mean, Henry had only 123 total touches last year. I would guess he probably can get up towards, like, 150 or so.
I would go probably a little more than that.
Maybe a little more than that. But still, like, for Derrick Henry, I think I'm with you. I think DeMarco Murray's worth his top, you know, two-round pick. He's going to be a great player in
top
standard or
pick,
PPR. Yep. Derrick Henry right now is being a little overvalued. People are taking People are taking him in the sixth round on Fantasy Football Calculator at the beginning of the sixth round.
Oh, no.
End of the sixth round in NFL 10s, which I guess I get a little bit more because
it's
best ball. And, you know, if anything were to happen to DeMarco Murray, there's no way.
If you're in a keeper league, then I mean, and you start, you know, like in round five or something.
Oh, sure.
Maybe. But
Standard redraft? No.
The trouble
is too early.
Sinking that type of pick into a player like Derrick Henry while he's very good, it's just he's not going to have the opportunities to pay dividends on that pick potentially all season, maybe not until later or if something happens to Murray. I'd be more comfortable taking Derrick Henry maybe in the double-digit rounds.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, in a 10-team standard, because there is so much depth left on the waiver wire, I don't mind sinking an earlier pick in somebody that could be a very high-value guy. So, like, even if it was a ninth-round selection in Derrick Henry, I'd be cool with that because, again, there's going to be – there's not that many guys that could just be absolute game-changers that you're going to get. But I mean, round six.
But in that range, you could get somebody like Paul Perkins. You could get somebody like Amir Abdullah, Frank Gore, somebody that's more likely.
Julius Thomas. My favorite one this year. My favorite six. Yep.
Wait, hold on.
In PPR.
Hold up.
Well, where did you take
him? Hold up.
I took him.
Wait, hold on. I would not be doing my job if I didn't ask you a follow-up. I know we're talking about the AFC South here, but what?
Yep. Wait, you took Julius
Thomas. Mark my words.
Hold on, let me find
Let me go into the mind of Cynthia Freeman.
Okay, round 13, the 15th tight end off the board, 145th, excuse me, overall in a recent PPR mock. You took Julius Thomas.
Yep.
You said you'd take him in the sixth.
If the floor is yours. If you're going to say, okay, look, I didn't draft, obviously it's not your second tight end. I'm not advocating a two tight end system here.
Right.
Right? But if you're, like, if you've gone, you know, like me, where sometimes I'm like, oh, I just drafted like five wide receivers and I didn't even draft like, you know, whatever. You kind of find yourself in that spot. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to like sneak something in here that people might try to steal from me. I know you could probably get him later, but to me, that's actually, if you're doing like a blind, like, you know, I try to like game you guys when we play. Like I'm just learning stuff.
Well, you want to test stuff.
I don't want you to read me. I'm bad at lying. I'm from the Midwest. You can read me too easy if I.
Okay.
So point being, I think that this is the Adam Gase reunion in Miami. You got a quarterback who, you know, you want to protect this quarterback. You've got a lot of things, you know, you've got a really great slot receiver and your running game, you got JGI, but there were some great games and then that's very bumpy road.
Oh yeah.
So Julius Thomas, this is someone that's very reliable.
Okay.
He hasn't had a great year, a couple of years in a row here.
Right.
But I think that they
But that was also with Blake Bortles.
But they didn't trade for him for nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like there's a point. There's a strategy there, especially since this is a great tight end class. So if they thought they could draft someone, they could have done that. So I'm just saying, sneaky, put it on your radar. Maybe six is high. Maybe we're being a little whatever there. But honestly,
But you have him, just in terms of tight end rankings, do you have him as a top 10 guy?
I do.
Okay.
Wow. He's not Gronk.
Who do you have?
No, obviously.
Like, let's be clear.
So what range does he fall in? Would you take Martellus Bennett or Julius Thomas?
Marty B.
Tyler Eifert or Julius Thomas?
Let's see. Eifert's O-line really frightens me now.
How about Jack Doyle or Julius Thomas?
Julius Thomas.
There you go.
Kyle Rudolph or Julius Thomas?
I think
we're finding it. You love Kyle Rudolph.
Just in general.
But I'm trying to – so you have him probably around that, like – tight end 8 to 12 range, I'm gathering.
I think
he's so far off the table for most drafters that
I know. So maybe you can sneak and get him later.
Yeah,
so my point is maybe six is aggressive, but honestly, consider him. And if you can try to, like, there's some gamesmanship there, but if you're not, if your strategy doesn't include being able to get Greg Olsen, Gronk, or one of the people who are going to, like, are actually wide receivers that you can put in as tight ends, then this is a person that you could slide into that tight end spot, especially in a PPR, because those little dink and dunks, I think that's going to be a key part of Tannehill's game.
Okay, there you go.
To see how that compares to the rest of the gentlemen on NFL.com, I think he's currently ranked 16th, and Marcus Grant has him the highest at 13th, and Fabiano and Alex have him at 17th.
So. I knew that Marcus was my favorite.
So there you go. behind the likes of Ebron, Doyle, Gates,
Ebron.
And Fedorowicz on NFL.com.
Sorry, that's my Lions fandom.
So there you go. All right, we'll move on to the Colts.
All right.
We talked about Andrew Luck. We talked about T.Y. Hilton. Let's talk about their running game. Frank Gore, at the age of 32 last year, still carried the ball 263 times. It's the fourth most carries in a season in his career, man. That was at 32 years old. He had 1025 on the ground, 277 through the air. It was his 11th consecutive season. He has had 1,200 or more total scrimmage yards. That to go along with 8 total touchdowns. Oh, my goodness. This guy was the RB12. He is the Terminator. He is absolutely the Terminator. But what do we do in 2017? We've been having this conversation for 5 years in a row. But what do you do with Frank Gore in 2017, Alex Gilhar?
I mean, I think you still have to believe in the guy. I'm past the point of doubting Frank Gore. When he hangs them up officially as done producing in the league. But it's not to say you go and jump at him in like the fourth round or something.
Okay.
You want to wait a little bit, mitigate that risk of his age and a increasingly crowded backfield now because they brought in Robert Turbin last year. They re-signed him. The GM really likes him.
Marlon Mack.
They went and drafted Marlon Mack.
Yeah.
So I think he's one of those great guys. If you start wide receiver heavy in your drafts, to look to Frank Gore because you're getting a lead, pretty much workhorse back in rounds 5 to 8, anywhere in there.
Totally unspectacular, but just solid as a rock, man. It's just been unbelievable. Cynthia, your take on Frank Gore in 2017.
I agree. He's one of those people who has this year, I'm kind of all in on the Colts offense getting better because their defense got better, right? Because, you know, you're bringing in someone who could potentially increase their number of turnovers so they get more. And, you know, I think they were number 20. They had the 21st starting field position on average and very few turnovers. Like, these are things that when you have running backs on teams that could jump his touchdown total, because if they're getting those, like, wonky turnover, we're at the, like, you know, we're starting this – you know, some good yard line,
then
that's a bet. Like, that's touchdowns are fickle. I get it. But that kind of improvement could lead me to believe that he'd have an increase. I don't think there's any reason to believe his production in terms of, you know, number of total yards is going to significantly go down. I don't see that happening unless he gets hurt, God forbid. But, you know, he could have some sneaky touchdown upside.
All right.
Question for the panel, Frank Gore. Does he get 1,100 rushing yards this year?
1,100 rushing?
Rushing.
I wouldn't say 1,100 rushing, but would it be 1,200 total?
Is
my question.
He is 600 yards away of becoming fifth all-time rushing, and he's 1,100 of passing Curtis Martin, and he'd be fourth all-time. So I'm saying if he gets 1,100 yards, he would be fourth all-time in rushing.
That's amazing.
That'd be awesome. Maybe that's the thing.
I just thought he already was, like, top. Like,
he's 8 right now. He's 200 behind Dickerson. He's 600 behind Bettis, a little bit more behind LT, and then 1,100 behind Curtis Martin.
In a game that has no longevity, this dude has been an absolute rock.
He helped me win my first like I do with my girlfriends, we all play together, and then we go out and buy shoes together after. That's how you say that on a podcast. And when we do that, then he helped me win that league, and my shoes.
What year was this?
It was a long time ago. It was a really long time ago.
Man. The Jaguars were an embarrassment last year. They were 3-13 overall. The team added Tom Coughlin, though, to run football operations there in Jacksonville. The team then added L4, talking about Leonard Fournette in the draft. Projections all over the place on this guy. I would love to know Cynthia Freeland's projection on the rookie.
Ask me in the end of August to refine this.
Okay.
But he's one that I think it honestly, that this is the one where I don't know For PPR, because I don't know how much they're going to use him in the run or in the passing game.
Sure.
But I think you're going to get a nice, like, I think it might be like old school Giants running back on the ground, pound, that kind of, like, I think that the influence of Coughlin, that could be something there. I don't want to overstate his influence because I don't think he's calling plays.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, I think you could see that.
I feel like that's what they want to do.
It'd be smart, right?
Right.
So to me, it's like all ground. So for PPR, I'm a little bit less on
enthused,
it.
Yeah.
You know, and you even saw that with Ezekiel Elliott last year. It was like ground, ground, ground. Then we add some pass, and you kind of ramp up the passing.
Right.
But that was like rookie quarterback and rookie running back. So, you know, that could make a difference. But for me, it's like ground, really solid season. Like I don't know if I want to give him 1,000 yards, but I think
close to
ground,
it, yeah.
900, like right around there.
Okay.
But not much in the passing game. So if you're PPR, beware.
But total yardage wise, you would say 1,100 is about right total. So 200 through the air. I mean, 200 through the air. No,
That's the thing. Like you were hinting at it, Cynthia. It's hard to know right now. There's been talk out of camp that they're like, oh, he's a great pass catcher. Like we want to use him there. But in the same token, they still have T.J. Yeldon, and he averages 57 targets over the past 2 years per his career. Like, and if they want to be multiple and have him in and spell Fournette so he's good there, it would make sense to take him off the field every now and again in those passing situations.
I just don't know if – I agree. I don't know if he's going to get enough of volume, like snaps, to be able to
We didn't see a lot of running backs catch balls out of the backfield in that Les Miles system. But, you know, the few passes that he did see there, I thought he looked pretty darn smooth actually catching the football. So
we have to remember, though, that there's like a lot of – like who do they play and who would be hitting him?
Right.
Who are the nose tackles that are coming after him? So this is a little different than, you know, the Mad Hatter's ring. Yes, he can catch it. But it's a little especially as a rookie, that's not what I would count on. It'd be like a nice surprise, but not.
Yeah.
Not
I think, and no, you put in the rundown, James, why some people are
the fantasy community hates
a little
him.
Down on him. Well, I don't think they hate him.
Oh my God. Come on, bro.
Where have you been seeing all this hate? Like,
it's amazing how much, like, nitpicky stuff people write about Leonard Fournette, and they'll totally – I just compare Leonard Fournette to Christian McCaffrey and the press that surrounds Leonard Fournette and the press that surrounds Christian McCaffrey.
Oh, boy.
It's ridiculous to me. I mean, both these guys have holes in their games, and that's fine, and I love both of them as prospects. I absolutely love both. But it's hard to find positive press surrounding Leonard Fournette's game, and it's really hard to find negative press surrounding Christian McCaffrey's game.
Well, I think what it is partially too is it, for at least for fantasy, is it comes down to their situations. Like, there are red flag landmines all over the place with Leonard Fournette. Let's start with Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
He's still the quarterback. They brought in Bortles and Coughlin. Coughlin and Fournette. They want Bortles to throw less. Bortles still leads the league in turnovers since 2014 with 63.
Jeez.
I was looking at this because, like, you were talking at this earlier, yeah, about how when you get turnovers, you know, it gives that your offense then a chance to score. But by the same token, when your offense commits a ton of turnovers, it takes away scoring opportunities. Yeah. And over the last 5 years, teams in the bottom 10 in turnover percentage score on average just rushing touchdowns, 4 fewer rushing touchdowns than teams ahead of that.
Great stat.
The Jags have been in the bottom 10 in the last 2 years. They just missed it. They were 21st in 2014. That's because Bortles only played 14 games and committed 22 turnovers in those 14 games. So that huge red flag.
Okay. All right.
Like you already said, the passing game, McCaffrey is going to get work in the passing game. That's why they drafted him. They're already talking about that. He's playing with Cam Newton. He's playing in an objectively better offense with probably still a better defense. I really like the Jags defense and the piece they put in it.
Yeah.
Let's see that unit play together for a full year and dominate people. So I think that's why there's the discrepancy in their games. There are holes in their personal games, but from fantasy, we're looking at the situation and where they're going. Fournette is also almost unanimously going ahead of McCaffrey. So that's why those red flags become a little more apparent.
I was about to say, I think it often has to do with your expectations too, right? So if you're expecting, like from McCaffrey, you're expecting shared. Nobody's thinking like, he's it. He's not like 100% snaps. He's going to be on the field for, you know. So it's, I think that the expectation there is very different as
Is Fournette worth a top 20 pick?
Top 20?
PPR, no.
right on the edge.
PPR, no.
Standard. PPR.
PPR, no.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
There you go.
What is
Had to
that?
Get that. That's the Jaguars, that's the Jaguars lady from last year.
She was that's like a woman?
Yeah, that was a woman. She was like interviewed by a local newscaster after they got
She's super
Jalen
excited
Ramsey
for Leonard Fournette.
And who'd they take? Miles Jack.
Yeah.
The news reporter asked her if the Jaguars won the draft, and she had her faint. Now,
local news
this interview.
Yeah.
And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Yeah. Well, it was a couple minutes from
She had the
beach.
Quotes like, yeah, you can't have the NFL's been holding the Jags back because you can't have a newcomer come in and steal the show.
Oh,
it's like
boy.
The T-shirt now. Oh. Harmon has one. You'll have to watch it later. It's great.
Yeah.
Missed the boat on that.
I'm like, what?
I'm going to save this Allen Robinson piece for if we can get, if we can possibly get Matt Harmon on
the
phone.
Let's fire him up.
If
dial him right now.
Let's dial it up. Let's dial it up. We're going to make a call into the wild.
International.
And we shall see if we can find.
We're going
Okay. Oh,
I don't know.
We're going to put the whole like number on so people could start like.
We did that once. We did that once on accident.
And we had to delete
Amazing.
That.
I like that you said on accident.
Here,
I like on accident.
Yeah.
By accident.
So,
on
yes,
accident.
We will save this Allen Robinson conversation for if we can get Matt Harmon on the phone. Whoa. Hello.
Whoa.
But
hold on,
we may not.
Back there.
We do have some.
The story was we had called him and we thought he was going to be around to answer. And then we were just shooting the breeze while it was ringing. And then it started going to
and
his
it was
voicemail.
Like, you've reached
Matt Harmon. Call me back it and Rank was the first one to notice, so he just started yelling and then I went back into the audio and bleeped out the rest of it, so.
That's funny.
All right, well, we're ringing.
We got like 5 digits into it.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Hello.
Oh, hey, it's
Hi,
our pal. What's up,
what's
Harmon?
Up?
Hey man, how you doing, pal?
Matt Harmon, who's
I'm
an
great.
Idiot.
It's always a good day to wake up and be me.
Wow.
All right, we welcome you in to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. It's been a minute since we had you on the pod. We thought we'd give you a call here and get your take on some of these AFC South wide receivers. We'll start with your boy there in Jacksonville, Allen Robinson. A bit of a fantasy disappointment last year. Well, not a bit, a lot. 883 through the air, just 6 touchdowns. What does he do in 2017, Matt Harmon?
I'm going to just bypass the fact that it's really rude that you're just calling me up and right away get to business. no pleasantries.
I apologize.
I'm gonna ignore that.
I apologize.
Yeah, apology accepted. Anyways, so with Allen Robinson, it's kind of hard to tell yourself the story about how he's going to get the volume that we've seen the last 2 years, considering what Jacksonville's done in the offseason. Obviously, they drafted Leonard Fournette in the top 5 picks. Then they came around the second round, and they snagged a big offensive guard, or a big potential tackle, maybe guard, I don't know, with Cam Robinson. But so they obviously want to be a different type of team. They don't want to be losing all the time where they threw a lot more than they probably have wanted to. So I don't know. I still love Allen Robinson, the player, but for fantasy, I think he's probably more of like a third-round pick and maybe like a high-end wide receiver 2, low-end wide receiver 1. For fantasy, it's just not like it's not a situation that I love as much as I have in the past.
All right, let's talk about Nuke Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins last year obviously was very frustrated with the quarterback play. Matt Harmon, I asked these two fine folks in the room with me if he bounces back in a big way, but could I get a projection from you regarding Nuke?
I'm kind of like off Nuke Hopkins this year at his current price. Like you see him going off the board on, you know, sites like Fantasy Pros or Fantasy Football Calculator and their ADP right now, and he's like a wide receiver. He's like the wide receiver 12, and that feels to me, I don't know how you guys feel in the room there, but like that feels to me like you're buying him at his absolute best case scenario, because if you look at the last 2 years, the only time he's really been a high-end wide receiver 1 for fantasy has really only been in one set of conditions, and that's when the Texans were at their worst as a team in the first half of the 2015 season. Their run-play percentage dipped in the second half of the year when their defense got better and they started winning more games. Bill O'Brien has always ranked inside the top 6 in terms of rush attempts in the NFL. So I don't really see them wanting to be a team that, you know, funnels 30% of their passing offense to Nuke Hopkins. And even if they do that, it's probably not going to be the same amount of volume that we've seen the last 2 years. Plus, like, I know things are going to be better without Brock Osweiler, at least we would assume, but how much better are they really with Tom Savage, who wasn't like a tangible upgrade as soon as he hit the field last year?
It's true.
I like Deshaun Watson enough as a prospect, but, you know, he's still going to be a rookie. So I can easily see Hopkins finishing as like wide receiver 19 or 20, and where he's going right now, like that, I just can't justify ever making the pick there at that point. So okay. I'm pretty much like completely out on Hopkins as long as this price stays around wide receiver 12.
All right, let's go to Tennessee. Marcus Mariota broke his leg late last year, but is on track to start the season. Team out of Corey Davis in the draft. Eric Decker, your favorite, one of your favorite wide receivers in free agency. Meanwhile,
hell yeah.
One of James's least favorite players.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was right in 2016. No, stupid.
Meanwhile, give me a break.
I know. All right. Just stop it. Rishard Matthews was your leading receiver last year in Tennessee. Given their, you know, current price tags, who do you like there in Tennessee? Who's your favorite preferred wide receiver in the Titans wide receiver core?
So right now it's Decker just because he's still cheap, but I would expect him to probably creep up into like the top 35 wide receivers picked by the time we're doing this in August. And at that point, then I really am a little bit shyer on the price just because I love Decker the player again, but this is another volume situation where like how Tennessee's offseason moves definitely seem to indicate that they want to open up the offense more. You know, they have a really efficient quarterback, especially in the red zone. Decker has been one of the most efficient wide receivers in the league in the red zone. So it's a good pairing from that perspective. And I think that like, on a week-to-week basis, we can kind of count on Decker as a touchdown threat. But outside of that, like I don't know if any of these guys are going to get the volume to be like predictable week-to-week because they still have Delanie Walker. They drafted Corey Davis in the top five. Rishard Matthews was going to be a trap either way this year because I don't think he's that great of a player. Like I think he's just fine. I think he's a guy, but yeah, not much more than that. Mm-hmm. So like all of these guys feel like they're going to be volatile week-to-week. Who's going to, like, it might be more just a week-to-week, like, guessing game with and matchup perspective in terms of who's going to have the week that week. So I don't really want to feel good about drafting any of these guys either.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I think I saw Mike Clay tweeted out his projections for these guys and for Davis, Decker, and Rishard Matthews. It was all roughly in the, like, 50 to 70 catch, like, 7 to 800 yard, like, 5 to 7 touchdown games. Like the only time I'd probably want to actually start one of these guys is maybe in a game if they're going to be in something that's projected to be a really high scoring affair. Hmm. Like if they were hypothetically playing the Packers again, like they did last year, like that'd be a game where I might start these guys. But otherwise, like Harmon's kind of right. At their costs, I feel like it's going to be too unpredictable. And it's going to be too frustrating to try and figure out when and where to start these guys.
I think it certainly opens the door anyways for Marcus Mariota being a great value quarterback. You talk about these individual wide receivers. Maybe individually we don't know what they're going to do. But I tell you what, as a collection, that's got to help the development of Marcus Mariota. Hopefully he comes back from his broken leg at 100%. All right, enough with the AFC South. Let's talk about a more important topic here. Let's talk about you, Matt Harmon. What you got going on, pal?
My favorite topic of conversation. Well, I just got back here to L.A. Last night. I've been back home, which it's funny how it's hard to get motivated to do literally anything productive when you're in your childhood home. It's like, well, I can just sit here and screw around. So in terms of what I've been doing the last 20 days, yeah, not so much anything that's like relevant to what listeners might care about, unless they really like me that much, and that I would completely understand. But
oh my God,
like in terms of football stuff, I'm working on building some projections for this year, actually, which is something I've never done before.
Okay,
so that's kind of exciting, and of course, obviously, just continuing to pimp reception perception. And if listeners are interested in more of my wide receiver analysis, you go to receptionperception.com. You click on my little face there, and you can buy access to all my data that I charted out this year. So excited about that, continuing to get out there. And like, it's not even July yet. So I'm really hoping that as the season goes on, or as the preseason goes on, we get to more like take season. The demand for that will be pretty great. So I'm excited. But in terms of what's going on with me, I don't know. Just trying to live my best life here.
How's Charlie? How have you guys been? I'm sure. Did you guys see the video? Charlie, a videographer in the house. I filmed it last night, but it was quite an adorable reunion. But how has the full day been, Harmon, with you guys hanging out again?
It's been good to have him back. Like there's some. So obviously, I did not take Charlie back east on the trip. But for those that don't know, which was really hard for me, but I think probably harder for him.
Is it because he doesn't?
Your reporting.
Is it because he doesn't like West Virginia? Is that why?
I'm going to ignore that. It's just because I could not imagine, like, possibly flying with him because he's a very anxious dog, and, like, I just don't
Xanax.
Think he would have done well with that.
You can give your dog Xanax.
Oh, boy.
It's true.
I don't know. I know there are ways to do it, but I just maybe we'll explore it down the line. But I got to say, it's nice having him back for me at least because there are just some things you, like, get used to having a dog around, like, you wake up in the middle of the night to, like, go to the bathroom or something. And, like, I always put out my hand to, like, tell him to stay. And, like, I was doing that. And I'd be like, oh, there's nobody here. or, you know, just little things like that you get used to. And when the dog's not around, it's kind of
Harmon,
sad.
Do you realize – so, wait, a dog, what, seven times the age – that's seven dog years for every one human year?
Something like that, yeah.
Yes.
That's so each dog year is, what, 52 days?
Basically.
You left your dog for half a year alone.
Wow. What a perspective.
That's what we said last night.
A year.
He probably took a year off his life for the stress.
A half a year. You left your dog for a half a year.
Wow.
Now that Xanax sounds better, doesn't it?
Where the hell were you to deliver these numbers before I made this decision?
I know. You got to consult with me.
Oh,
all right.
From now on, I got to consult NFL Network analytics expert Cynthia Freeland.
Yes, on how long you leave a dog alone.
Yes.
Half a year.
Clearly.
I like
it. What an idiot I am.
All right, should we let him go and get back to Charlie?
All right, pal, we're going to let
you go. I'll see you soon, Harmon.
The great Matt Harmon. Find his work at receptionperception.com. He is one half of the fantasy hipsters as well. Matt, we appreciate your time, man.
I think we already hung up on him.
All right, we already hung up on him, so that's all good. But he'll listen to the podcast, no doubt.
Here you go.
No doubt we will get Matt Harmon to listen to the podcast today. All right, we'll close out your show with a round of Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hook. Give me daps, because I'll be scribbling rap.
Give me dabbing up daps abound. Daps.
Daps.
All right, Daily Dap time. We shall start with the WizKid from Wisconsin, Alex Gellhart. What you got?
Two daps. First one, over the weekend, I saw The Big Sick. It was in a limited release, New York and L.A. It's produced by Judd Apatow, directed by Michael Showalter,
nice.
Starring Kumail Nanjiani and Zoe Kazan. And it's based on Kumail's real life with his wife, actually, because while they were dating, she came down with some incredibly rare illness and had to be put into a medically induced coma for months. So that's kind of the center of the story is this, young Pakistani guy and this white girl are dating and she gets put into this coma and it kind of throws him in with her family and stuff like that. Amazing movie. It's super funny, super heartfelt, super touching. Honestly, can't recommend it highly enough.
Wow.
It was phenomenal.
What's the name of it again?
The Big Sick.
The Big Sick.
Yep. S-I-C-K.
I've seen the commercials for it. I just couldn't remember.
So I think it's opening wide soon. So keep an eye out for it when it comes to your theater, but go check it out. It's super funny. It's, like I said, it's got a great heart to it. And it's not like – it's still hilarious without being, like, super raunchy like some of those other Apatow movies that they hit for a while with, like, Superbad and what's the one I'm forgetting? Oh, Knocked Up and stuff like that. It's just – it's really great, so I can't recommend it highly enough. Second thing, much dumber. One of the stupidest things I think I've ever watched in my life, but I was, like, cry laughing last night at midnight in the streets of Westwood as I was walking Charlie – because I stumbled upon this video. It was a guy that used to do it on Vine, and it was called Pronouncing Things Incorrectly.
Okay.
So he would do the six-second Vine of just him, like, with, like, brands or fruits or, you know, cereals or random signs for stores.
Okay.
And he would just horribly mispronounce them, and it's just like he'll do, like, five or six of them things, just like bam, 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 bam. It's so dumb, but it's hilarious.
I need this
like
in my life.
There's a compilation video on YouTube. And I think people must have thought I was psychotic as I was just walking through the streets, like, scream laughing with Charlie. So just search
I need this guy
pronouncing things incorrectly on YouTube, and you will not be disappointed.
I like it. Cynthia Freeland, do we have Daily Daps from you, ma'am?
We do. We have two. So it's summer, and you know how, like, when we were little, you have to, like, read books in the summer, and you get, like, stickers and stuff? So like, I've been, like, consuming books like a maniac. Like,
yeah.
I'm, like, at
good
like,
for
two
you.
Or three a week. It's crazy.
Oh, I'm jealous. That's
I know.
Awesome
it's good. So I just read this really good data science book. Yep, I said it. but it's actually, like, it's something that I think
I read a great data science book.
No, I would not recommend it here if I didn't think that our listeners would really like it.
All right.
It's called Everybody Lies.
Okay.
And it's a really great book because it I'll basically says
list.
That, okay, fair warning, there are some things in there, like they talk about some things that are a little raunchy. But
okay.
It's good. This guy, Seth, the author, Seth Stevens Davidovitz, I'm just butchering his name, but he ultimately he took years worth of Google search data and he like mapped it to the most amazing things that tell us truths about ourselves. He talks about the election. He talks about
what?
It's fantastic book.
Okay.
So it's worth the read. It just came out. I'm a big fan. I mean, it's a good read. So that's my first one.
Okay.
And then my second dap, Oreo cookies.
Yeah.
It's a great choice.
I just like them.
Things we learn on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. I love it. I will give my first undaps to Chris Paul, CP3. Got traded over to the Rockets because he said he did not want to play for the LA Clippers anymore. I just don't.
Then you want him gone then.
That's fine.
If he doesn't want to play for them, then that's good.
No, here's the thing. I know, Clipper Nation, all that kind of thing. Okay, but it's not that I'm mad at him for leaving. I'm not that guy. I'm just saying, I'm really not that guy. Like KD going to the Golden State Warriors, I'm down. Do you? It's all good, but it doesn't make any sense. I mean,
why?
First of all, the money. It makes absolute.
Oh,
no
it
sense
does for, make sense from the money.
No, it makes absolute.
The Rockets need cap space, and
no,
he's still got his
no, no,
bird.
No, no, no. I'm talking about yes, he retains his bird rights. That's
right.
Fine. So, and he's going to take $11 million hit this year, with the thought that he could then sign a supermax deal at the end of next season. Bro, you're playing with $200 million in change. For a guy that has an extensive injury history, you're telling me at the age of 33, somebody's going to sign this guy to a 5-year Supermax deal with those injuries? And again, we're talking about playing around with $200 million. Let's say he blows out an Achilles. Let's say he blows out an ACL, whatever it might be. That money is bye-bye. It's just, to me, I don't know. It didn't make sense from a financial standpoint to me. From a basketball standpoint, it makes absolutely no sense. His style of gameplay does not mesh with what I think will work well with the Mike D'Antoni system.
You just mean James Harden.
There's James Harden there, who is also a ball-dominant guard as well, who just put in an MVP-level type season, and you're going to ask him to step aside and give the ball to CP3.
Why is he stepping aside?
Why would CP3?
CP3 is
like Blake Griffin and he. I mean, they both had – they put up – pretty significant numbers.
Man, we're having a significant basketball talk, which I love. But we'll move on. I just don't think – I didn't like it from a basketball standpoint.
We'll take it offline.
I didn't like it from a financial standpoint. I just – to me, it just didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. But
it definitely was. It definitely was like, whoa.
Oh, for
but
sure.
But I think you dig in a little deeper and you see like
– I think if he went to San Antonio, I'm all about it. I'd be super happy for CP3. I think it'd be great for the league, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, daps to the Great British Baking Show. Total left turn here. My wife was into it, and I just started watching a few episodes, like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 weeks ago. And first of all, I'm a sucker for cooking shows. Like, I love Chopped. I love all
those. They're so addicted.
Oh, my God.
I know. I can't stop watching
I love them.
Especially Chopped. Like, if that's on, I'm like, I have so much to do.
It's only such a small commitment.
Right.
Let me watch it through this one break. Yes. No. I love cooking competition shows. I'm a sucker for them all. Great British Baking Show, Mary Berry, Paula Hollywood, Mel... I'm going to butcher her name.
It's okay. I did that already.
E. Droik and Sue Perkins, who I absolutely love. Sue Perkins, I think, to me, is a superstar. But yes, on your marks, get set to bake. The Great British Baking Show. It's on PBS. You can find it on Netflix as well. The most current season is currently on Netflix. Go check it out
if
you are
into. What an eclectic bunch of daps.
I know. It's all over the place.
Big Data novel, or not novel, a book, which I have on my list now.
No, you should. It's great. You can
audio book.
It's really good.
It looks awesome.
Really good.
It is all over the place. We got basketball. We got some cooking shows in. We got some movies.
Do you have anything about the Dodgers really quick? Because, I mean... Just they're on a roll. Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger is a beast. That's going to do it for our show today. For the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar, Cynthia Freeland joining us on this beautiful Wednesday. I'm James Coe. We'll see you.